Today, I have the absolute pleasure of welcoming Theo Bergmann to the Happiest CEO podcast. Theo was not just a professional football player who competed at the highest level of the game. He also is someone who brings an incredible mindset of resilience, growth, and balance to everything he does. From early days in the Bundesliga system, which is a German system, to carving out his own unique path, Theo's story is one of determination, constant evolution. And what stands out for me is not only does he have a lot of technical skills on the pitch or head, but he has also an ability to stay his ground, focus, and is really open to learning and qualities that really translate way beyond sports nowadays. And today, Theo coaches and supports professional athletes and business leaders long term, and anyone who is searching for solutions to their health challenges, and particularly chronic fatigue and brain fog and things that are related to that on a long term coaching basis. And he uses his journey to remind us that performance isn't only about talent or hard work, but also about mindset, community, and staying true to his or your values. Welcome, Theo.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the nice introduction, Sebastian. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, it's so exciting to have you here. And how random that we are from the same country, but that's not the way that we meet or why we met. But actually from all the amazing work that you do, in particular in the chronic fatigue space or alternative health, I would say. But I don't want to start there. I would love to know a little bit about, I guess, what did it take for you? Because I believe that links into the challenges that you felt later. What was the reason for you to be so invested that you could play soccer at such a high level with 18, starting with four, I believe. But like, where did this come from? And who is Theo that made such a commitment to his career that he got there?
I think I'm somebody that is very driven to when I put something in my head or when I have a specific goal, I'm very driven or very eager to achieve that goal, I would say. And, you know, I was growing up with my brother, 2 years older than me. And he was playing soccer or football, however you want to call it. Everybody in the family was like a little bit crazy about soccer. And I just started playing when I was 4 years old. And it turned out my brother was very good. I was very good. And yeah, I mean, in Germany, you know how it is. You know, every small kid, every boy that is growing up is like, yeah, I want to be a professional soccer player at some point. And yeah, that's what I wanted as well. And in order to get there, you need a lot of dedication, lots of ambition. And actually, not everybody, some people there or some players are so blessed with their talent that actually they don't, you know, they can actually do it even without like putting too much effort in there. But of course, you have to train and you need to put, you need to train a lot for this. But I had the talent as well. And early on, I was then deciding to go to a school that is like, I don't know, 45 minutes away from me, from my home when I was 14 years old, and to a boarding school that was specialized in sports. So I went there and yeah, trained almost two times every day to reach my goal of being professional. Yeah. And then after, I don't know, it was a long road, of course, but after training every day for years, even decades, when I was 18, I had my first pro match and a first in a third Bundesliga in Germany. Yeah.
Very exciting. And that went quite well for what, almost 7 years, or did you already realize after a shorter period of time that not everything was balanced the way that you wanted it to be balanced?
So in the beginning, it worked out pretty well. I started to play. So it's always like when you're in a youth team and then you're about to get to the adults, the pro level, there are only like one or two players from every youth team that is able to make the step or gets like a professional contract. I was one of them. And then playing is another thing that you need to achieve. So within a couple of months, that was the case for me. And it worked out pretty well. So it was the third league in Germany. It's a pretty good league. This is where actually... I would say if professional soccer starts in Germany, even in the fourth league already. And third league is it's a pretty good level, pretty decent. Yeah, then I played there and worked out pretty well. I played very well. I got I was a young star. People were excited about me. People were like, other clubs were looking out for me because I was playing well. And that went pretty well. Then new clubs were like trying to get me into their team, try to buy me or try to get me. And that was when I was, when we were, do you say relegating? I think we were relegating. So we were going one league down. And then I was like, okay, I need to leave my home place, so to say, which is called Erfurt in Germany. I need to leave that place because other clubs are reaching out to me. They want me and I want to have the chance to play at a better club even. But that was also a time where I got some health issues already. So, but still at this time, it was pretty decent. It was a nice experience. I was playing well. Of course, I had an injury here and there sometimes, but only one bigger one. And then everything went pretty well. And then it went even better. I don't know if I should go on just, but just let me know if you have some questions in between. But
No, that makes sense. So, I'm just trying to really figure out in my head. It's like someone has been driven and passionate since he was four. You know, it's great that you had that environment with family as well. I'm sure that was a lot of fun or a common ground to connect over, the soccer and the being an athlete. And then you somehow, it went really well, but your health sort of caught up with you. And I guess I wonder, like, how long... I understand what chronic fatigue is. I've had that while I wrote my master thesis, and it took me a while to even know what was going on. In fact, I think I only named it after it was sort of almost over, after I sort of gave up and gave myself a massive 1 year break. But so I relate to where it came from. But were you aware that you had to change your lifestyle in order to get over it, or were you just pushing even harder? Which to me is sort of like the curse that can happen. It's like, okay, something is wrong, so I just push harder to get through this.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, I was already pretty aware about my diet and about my lifestyle. So I was already, when I was 17, 18, I finished high school. And then my parents were always like, you need to study something. You need to do something next to your soccer. Because it's just important for you. But then they said, but after high school, you just take 1 year for soccer and then just take care of this fully. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, let's. I'm so happy that school is over. I can just do my soccer. And then, of course, at this age, I was just like playing FIFA the rest of the day and PlayStation, which was not very beneficial, not very productive way to spend my leisure time. But then I realized, I can't do this the whole day. And at least I need to learn something. Like, what can I do in order to improve my game, in order to get better? So I was like, the first thing was like, I need to change my diet. I need to change my nutrition to see what I can do better. Yeah. So I was looking at certain things. I think I was reading a book from Bear Grylls at this time. He had a recipe book. Then from Novak Djokovic, I was looking into like gluten-free diets, avoiding dairy already. So I was really starting I didn't eat any processed food except for, when I had a cheat day, and I was really starting to clean up my diet and try to have a better diet, but certainly it was not enough at this time. So I was already aware that this plays such a big role, but I was still in a maze of not knowing what's really going on with me when I had these kind of symptoms. Yeah.
Gotcha. And did you feel the pressure of performing at the level that you were? Because to me, I would clearly say, I was aware of diet and how I was eating during the time chronic fatigue started. But I think what really happened is that I looked at the workload that I had and the way that I needed to perform to get, my master's thesis done. And only if I get it done, I can stay in New Zealand where I was living at the time. Otherwise, I would have to go back to Germany. So I felt... Like looking back, I think there was also a lot of emotional pressure. You don't sound like that. That was your main issue then?
There was about some emotional pressure. So the thing is, so what actually happened, I had a flu, just a regular flu. And it wasn't the third season of my professional career. I just had a regular flu. And after that flu, something changed in my brain. I was like, something is like off and I don't know what's going on. So it felt like I was always like, I felt dizziness in my brain. I felt like I was always slightly drunk. I couldn't really concentrate. I couldn't focus. I couldn't look people in the eyes and follow what they say. And everything was mentally very exhausting for me. And I just didn't know what's going on. And I went to the team doctor that was like taking care of me at that time. And she was like, yeah, you know, it's just your circulation. It's after your flu. It's nothing major. It should be gone in like a week. Well, and I was like, okay, let's just wait another week. But the symptoms just stayed there. And I didn't know what to say to these kind of symptoms, but now I know it was bad brain fog. And I didn't know what I need to do about this. And this is actually where it started. And then I realized, okay, hold on, I have something here that is like, because you have such a good understanding and feeling about your body. When you're a professional athlete, you feel like 1%, if that's less, you already know there's something not right. And then I felt like, okay, this is something that is weird. Like it feels bad. And I was scared because soccer and playing professional soccer was everything for me. Like it was my dream the whole time. I put, you know, when we had high school celebration, it was on a Thursday. And I was already playing in our professional team while I was in high school. And the trainer, it was on a Thursday and we had a game on a Saturday and the trainer said to me, you can't go. I couldn't even go to the high school party. You know, sacrificing so much for this dream. And then I was at a place where I was there, but my health was not in there anymore. So that was mentally extremely hard because then you have mental pressure already, but that was fine for me because I was a good soccer player. I could like handle that. But when your health is not good, you get an intense mental pressure. Like that was not nice at all. Yeah.
Hmm. And it got so bad that you basically said you wanted to quit. Was that sort of like you couldn't handle it or reduce the brain fog to the degree that you could play your highest level anymore?
The thing is, while I was playing, you're in so much adrenaline, I was able to play and nobody even realized that I'm not feeling well. But it was just the effort I needed to put in to perform at the same level was just really hard. Like it was very exhausting. Like, and then our team got relegated and I had to find a new club and I was still playing well. And I was at the very end of the season. And then new clubs were reaching out to me. I had to decide between two clubs. And I was like, yeah, let's go for this one. I don't know if you know Kaiserslautern. That's a very famous big club in Germany.
Okay.
And I went there to play there in the third league. But my symptoms stayed. I did preseason there. Nobody. I was never talking with anybody about this. I was just like, you know, going to training. And when training was over, I was happy that it was over. I went home. Even like doing regular stuff like groceries or anything. I was just like not in the mood to do anything. It just sucked out any fun of my life.
Yeah.
It was really exhausting. And then on top of that, I got like that feeling sometimes where I felt I'm carrying like a 20 kilogram vest with me. I feel like I don't have any strength in my body anymore. Like I feel like I don't have any energy left, so to say. It was not like it's up and down the energy. It was just like there's nothing there anymore. And that was going up and down. The brain fog was pretty much there the whole time. And but I was still able to perform somehow. It was like always up and down. Then I played a little bit and I had the very first great season, actually. And I somehow managed to push through it. But it was really hard. And I remember some situations where I got subbed into a game. I was so tired and so weak. I don't even know how I did it. So, but the good thing is, for me, I was a very technical player. So I was not like, I didn't use my physis a lot. I was not like tackling everybody left and right. I was running crazy. I had a good vision. I had a good technique. I had a good first contact, good like free kicks and all of that. So I could compensate with that very easily, but it was still very hard because you need to, I mean, it's professional sports, you know, you need to be very on top actually. So it was hard and I still didn't know what to do about it. So, you know, I went to my team doctor, checked my blood. Everything came back normal. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
I went to a neurologist. The neurologist was checking my brain, checking electrodes on my brain. Couldn't find anything. Was prescribing me antidepressants, even though I wasn't depressed. So I was and I was so desperate. I was 21 years old. You know, I was so desperate that I was like, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to take this if it's helping me. And then I was talking to my parents and they were like, no, like, have you looked at the side effects? You're not depressed or anything. Like you should not take this. And I was like, yeah, okay. Then I'm going to try other things. Even though my diet already was very healthy. I mean, everybody has a different understanding of, or a different opinion of what's healthy. I was not eating processed food. I was eating almost completely plant-based already at that time. But just some things that were not good for my diet and for my brain specifically. And you can basically do every diet wrong. So, and I did that as well with the vegan or plant-based diet. So I was in a vicious cycle there. And then I tried, of course, different things, naturopaths, chiropractors, alternative practitioners. I went to Munich. I knew the doctors from Bayern Munich. So I went to the doctors there. They did MRI scans for my brain. They could never find anything. And they were looking at me like, yeah, I don't know. We don't know what's going on with you. And I'm like, I started to feel like I'm getting crazy because people were looking at me like I'm crazy because you have like these weird symptoms. And nobody understands you in a way. And sometimes I was just with all these doctor's appointments and going left and right. I was then sometimes sitting in my apartment in Kaiserslautern. I was just like sitting there alone. My family was not there. I was just crying there. I was just sitting there crying there because my dream that I had all the time was just like, I was not able to do that anymore. Like I wanted to do it. And that was really hard. Yeah. And I couldn't really find a way to get better. And then people were starting to tell me, yeah, work on the emotional side or, you know, try psychologists. So I tried psychologists and mental health trainers. We had very good ones actually. And they helped me to cope with the situation better.
Yeah.
But it was still not an answer. It was still not an answer. And I didn't know what to do. It was not helping. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that's something that I'm really into biographies and autobiographies of mostly, you know, very successful people. And when you read sort of a little bit more in the details of their lives, there are these phases and these struggles that are hard to guess they have, because from the outside all looks amazing. And you know, even people who want to help, for example the neurologist that you saw, I'm sure that they can see like, well, overall, you know, all is well. There's probably just an episode, something happened that, you know, got you a little bit off your path, but you know, there's nothing big. And I think that's often an oversight, and it takes self-reflection or a really good coach who has been there, done that, to help you actually finding tools. Because by the sounds of it, you tried all sorts of things, but at the end of the day, you had to put the puzzle together. No one else was really able to do that, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so from there, how did you actually find a solution, or did you find a solution, or did you at one stage more or less give up and just say, look, I can't go any further here and have to really focus on looking for solutions and not play soccer?
Yeah. So it was again Novak Djokovic. I mentioned that before, that I was reading a book from him, and then he was like,
"What is the book, by the way?"
It's a very old book. It's like 10 years ago. I would not recommend that now from my perspective.
Right on.
But it's just gluten free diet something by Novak Djokovic.
Yeah. But it helped.
He was posting an Instagram story and holding up a celery juice in his hand. And posting and tagging somebody called Medical Medium, I was like, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. Let me check this out. And then I was checking out this website and I saw so many people getting better and a lot of testimonials from people that were healing. I'm like, that's so interesting. Because I knew deep down inside of me, I always knew there has to be an answer in nature for our problems. I just never knew where to look out for, what I can do to help myself and maybe even other people. And at this time, there was Anthony, his name is Medic Community, Anthony William. He was like putting out this one of the books that was called Liver Rescue. And it was in 2019. And I was very intrigued. I was like, okay, like, let me check this out. And then I was reading that book, and there was like a page about brain, or like a chapter about brain fog. And it was like, for the first time in my life, somebody explained, this is what's causing your problem. This is what you experience, first of all. Nobody ever could describe before what I experienced. I'm like, how the hell can this guy know what I have? It's like, how? And then he was like explaining exactly what I have, what the cause of that is, and what I can do about it, what should work for this. So I was very intrigued. And then I was getting really into that. And then I was learning that actually a virus can cause that. Epstein-Barr virus can cause brain fog in combination with toxic heavy metals in the brain. And then I was starting really to clear that up. I also had acne, which was not a problem for me. I mean, it didn't look nice, of course. It was not nice for the girls and everything, but for dating life. But in general, that was not influencing my career. You know, I could still, if you have acne, you can still run around and do everything. But that went away within the first 2 to 3 months after I changed my diet again. And I was like, I had acne for 8 years. I took antibiotic creams for this. There is something that is changing right now here in my body. And then I was like looking more into what I can do more for my brain and for my nervous system, getting more into cleansing the metals out. At some point, I even got a complete black tongue for like 6 months when I was really getting into it. You couldn't even scrape that off. It's sometimes my clients have that as well sometimes.
Yeah.
When you really go deep into cleansing and cleansing toxic heavy metals, you can actually surface on your tongue, and you can get a black tongue. It's crazy.
It's crazy. It feels scary.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't know that this can actually happen, you can be worried a little bit about that. Yeah. But then within like 6 to 12 months, I was, you know, it was a lot of ups and downs. You know, it's not like people sometimes think that healing is like this. You know, it's just you start here and then you change your diet. Everything is perfect. Yeah. And then you get better and you heal and you never have an issue in your life. It's always like 2 steps forward, 1 step back, 3 steps forward, two steps back. And that's also mainly because when you start to feel better and you get your old energy back, you're like very motivated to do like more things and to do like, oh my God, no, I can do this. I can do that. I can work out more and can train more. And then you get the consequences of like getting a setback sometimes because your adrenals are too weak again, or it was too hard on your nervous system. But for me, within like 6 to 12 months, I was able to heal these symptoms, and I had my energy. I had my energy back. I haven't had that brain fog anymore. I could actually. It's one of the best feelings if you had brain fog and then you don't have it anymore. Because before, it's like, you know, some people say that people with brain fog are one of the most hardworking people because you need way more effort to do everything. It's just so exhausting. And when you then get relief from that, and right now I can work 12 hours every day, I'm super sharp. I always used to remember things very good, but it's just a different feeling. It's just very good to have my brain back. And that took a couple of months to like almost a year, but it was definitely worth it to put in the effort to get better. And what can I say? Then that was really great. And then I was still playing soccer and I was super happy. I was like, yeah, this is what I need to do. This is what's, you know, how can you say it? This is what's helping my career, or like, I'm just thinking
it's worth this way.
Yeah, exactly. This is what saves my career. That's what I wanted to say. This is my career.
And I'm quite familiar with sort of the sports career, because there's a expiry date, and making that transition to something else that either is related to still your sports, or you know, something that you actually picked up over the years that you were playing is difficult. I've met both sides. Some people that really made that transition very well and it worked for them to stay somehow connected to the name they had when they were performing themselves, and others that could not really make that work, and eventually, you know, that's that they go back to sort of like living a, I guess, a very normal life and not a high performing life, because there was no, I guess, no income in that. Like, you know, you just have to gear yourself up. And so I guess, you know, this whole expiry thing of like, you know, where to go next, I can see that this obstacle that you had, which was a massive one, actually probably catapulted you into becoming an expert in the things that you dealt with and more, to then help other people in your position, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, I mean, for me, it was actually the greatest blessing I ever had, getting my own health issues.
Yeah.
If you would have said this to me at that time, I would probably punch you in the face or anything. But it was, in retrospective, it was one of the best things that could happen for me, because I was not meant to be a professional. I was not born to be a professional soccer player. Like,
yeah.
And I felt that after being in that space for a couple of years, it's a very selfish business. Like, people think you're in a team together and, you know, it's team sport. You can picture it like everybody within the team is his own little company, you know?
Yep.
Everybody tries to get the best out of it for themselves. It's just how it works. Like, you have within the team, you have every position, you have two players almost. There is only one player that can play. If you don't play and we win, you don't get the bonus. If you don't play, you get a contract in another team that is not as good. You know, it's just like you need to see where you're at, and you need to see that you're playing as much as you can, and that you perform. And if you don't do that, it sucks. It really sucks. And then when your health is declining and when you feel like, oh, I'm actually better than these guys, but I can't perform at the same level or even better as them because my health is not good, that's very frustrating. But yeah, it was teaching me a lot.
Yeah, no, I understand. Hey, did you ever figure out why you had potentially a heavy metal exposure or this virus?
So it's a good question. Everybody has Epstein-Barr virus and everybody has heavy metals in their system. So it doesn't matter who you are and where you live in the world. Nowadays, we're getting exposed to, let's talk about metals, for example. If you ever drank tap water in your life, you have metals in your system.
There you go.
If you ever had seafood or tuna, you have metals in your system. Pots and pans, aluminum cans, pharmaceuticals. All pharmaceuticals have a lot of heavy metals, especially some of the pharmaceuticals specifically. And so it's almost, metals drop from the sky all the time. It's really hard to not get, everybody has toxic heavy metals. It just depends on how many you have. Depends on how many pharmaceutical treatments you got, depends on what you ate, so many things. You can't even inherit toxic heavy metals, you know? There are people, that's also the reason why, for example, Alzheimer or dementia or Parkinson's runs in the same family. It's not because it's genetic, it's because you inherit the same heavy metals that are causing this. And the same goes for an Epstein-Barr virus. Everybody has that in the system. There are over 60 varieties of it, and you can first of all inherit that as well. And with Epstein-Barr virus, if somebody would drink from my glass right now, you can get my Epstein-Barr virus. You can get it everywhere, like through saliva, bodily fluids. If you eat at a restaurant and the chef cuts his finger and there's a little bit of blood, you know, on his hands or going into the food somehow, you can get an Epstein-Barr virus from the chef. Like, it's impossible to not have it nowadays. But what is important is to strengthen your immune system and to cleanse everything as much as you can, that you don't get health issues in the first place. Or if you have them, that you make sure to get the stuff out of your body.
That makes a lot of sense. And to me, sort of my journey through talking a lot to a lot of different practitioners sort of on this podcast, what I found is that society has changed so much from the strictly medical approach, which was just where the knowledge was, right? There was no online community, online information where you could at least get some ideas, whether they're right or wrong, but, you know, you could get ideas. It was the library, it was really slow, and therefore information didn't flow to the degree that you actually realized prevention has a lot of purpose nowadays. And to me, doing maintenance on my body is something that to me now is very normal, but I realize when talking to other people, it's not. You only go to someone who can help you when you have a massive issue. However, from just looking at lifespan to switching to, yes, there's a lifespan, but there's also a health span. And more people that are still quite well would say, well, I want to continue to be well. And I know that if I use medical markers, they will only get red and really give me an alert when something's already wrong. And if you have an overload of virus or heavy metals or something, then things are really, really wrong. And so to your point of everyone is exposed to heavy metals, and it makes a lot of sense that we are. And virus is the same. It comes then down to how can we actually maintain our longevity or our vibrant health by having a constant slow detox or having irregular focuses on how can I make sure that I maintain a really vibrant health rather than looking out for something that is massive wrong. Because once we are there, it's a very different conversation to get back to a healthy life, I reckon.
Yeah, exactly. What I also think is funny nowadays is that everybody talks about longevity, but we're sicker than ever. The lifespan is shortening and people are talking about longevity. I'm like, why don't we talk about like getting rid of chronic illness first before we try to live longer? Because nobody's living longer. And even the longevity experts, they don't even know what you need to do in order to live longer because nobody's talking about your liver. Your liver, it's even the word is even in there, liver. You know, if you don't take care of your liver, you can take as many supplements as you like. You can do all the biohacks. If you don't take care of your liver in the first place, you're doing everything wrong in longevity. And it's just so funny. People are getting more sick left and right. Chronic illness is rising. It doesn't even matter what kind of disease we're talking about. If it's diabetes, cancer, chronic fatigue, brain fog, ADHD, everything is getting worse. But somehow people think just because we have more technology, we have more AI, we have more technology and supplements and so on and so forth, we live longer. We don't live longer. We're sicker than ever. And if it goes on like this, like it sounds hard, but if it goes on, it sounds like you can't even imagine it. But if you look at the statistics just for infertility alone, if it goes on like this, all men will be infertile by the year 2045. You know, and we're getting sicker than ever. Pharmaceuticals make more money off everything. That means we're getting more sick and people don't live longer. People get sicker and they die earlier nowadays. That's for me also a kind of a scam when it comes to all of the longevity stuff.
Yeah. You really got me there with the fertility, and it's men and women, right? It's
exactly.
It's such a sad topic. I've been blessed so far with that, but around like friends and family, you know, like you see people struggle and no one is given those tools. You don't learn at school, and often they are actually basics that are just somehow forgotten. And it's really saddening, because I think, and actually even more so, ADHD is something that recently I really got to focus on that, because I hear more and more that people have no idea where it's coming from. And that are really? And so when you talk to experts, like if you go to traditional Chinese medicine, they would really clearly tell you the symptoms are overload of stimulation, which is a spleen issue, which is a lifestyle choice. This has nothing to do with something random that comes into your life. It's screens for children. It's stimulated children with sugar and so on. And I'm everyone their own, but there are certain markers that actually could help. And I wonder, like, what type of conversation do you have with your patients around these topics that really are, there's a lot of common sense in there if you know the right things. If not, then it doesn't feel even like common sense, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's infertility alone is, and you know, all the toxins that we're exposed to the whole time, kids get allergies. Like if you look at a classroom nowadays, just like elementary school, or like a teenager, half of the class has acne, half of the class has allergies. Like, where is this supposed to go? Like, it's insane. And it's not getting better. And then also the infertility stuff. It's, when you think about it, there's, if you go to an IVF clinic, okay, you're not allowed to wear fragrances on your body. Because they know it kills off the sperm. They know it kills off everything that is supposed to live. You're not allowed to wear that there. But we're not talking about putting and spraying that on our bodies every day and having that in our laundry detergent and in our dish soap and dishwasher tablets and in shampoo that we put on every day. Everything is fragrance in there. And we don't talk about this when we also talk about infertility. But in IVF clinics, they don't allow that stuff. Why does nobody know this?
Yeah.
You know?
On the topic of virus, I remember being a teenager and someone in my circle of friends had one of these viruses, which is connected to chronic fatigue. And they were told, you can't eat processed cheese because that's really bad for this virus. And even back then, I was probably 16, like, well, if that's bad when you have a virus, who tells you that processed cheese is any good when you are healthy? It's probably actually contributing to your just the load that your body has to deal with, right? But there is still sort of like the barrier between when you're unhealthy, then yes, do that. And if there's a really special procedure like IVF. But when you're healthy, just do whatever you like. It's like, really?
No. Exactly. And, you know, some of the doctors, they even say to you, if you change your diet for your gut problems, for your brain fog, for whatever you have going on, it won't do anything. Like for thyroid issues, just take the medication, don't do anything about it. You can't change it with the diet. Meanwhile, a lot of people do.
Yeah. I don't know what it is nowadays, but one of my best friends is a pediatrician. And when he studied medicine, I think nutrition took up 20 hours of his 7-year studies or something crazy. Like it wasn't a lot. And that's, I think, where we start falls short when we say, and medical professions can in general always also advise on nutrition. It's like, not really, right? That's not what they studied, you know. Fair enough. Like they do what they do well, but you know, they also do things that actually there's no education behind it, and we should be much more honest about that.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, we see, you know, I don't like when, you know, there's like a fine line between, I don't like when people see it like very black and white, because doctors, you become a doctor because you want to help in the beginning. You become a doctor because you want to help. And there are doctors that care, and there are doctors that don't care. And there are doctors that try to help, but they can't because they don't know. And there are doctors that actually educate themselves and they can help you. It depends on where their knowledge is coming from and what they're doing about it. But, you know, there are people that say, oh, all doctors are bad. And then some people say, oh, we need to listen to our doctors all the time. I don't think, you know, when I'm breaking my leg, I also want to have a good surgeon. So I think we should not. That's also something that goes a little bit into the wrong direction. But I also think that most doctors are just drug dealers. And they just learned that, and they're just trying to prescribe you a pill. They don't care about your lifestyle, about your diet, about how much you walk, how much stress, whatever is going on in your life. And they can't even do that because they have like 10, 15 minutes to talk to you when they're in their practice. So you can't even blame them sometimes for that. But in the end, it's getting more and more into a time where people need to take care of their own health. It's getting very different.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes when things change, sometimes it's a little bit messy, and there are interest groups as well that push in one direction, or just the old paradigm and the new paradigm. And I heard you mentioning AI. What's your take on that? Because I do understand the topic quite well when it comes to medical advice or medical information from the AI. I think there's really an opportunity not to overuse AI, but what's your take, and what's the opportunities and risks that you see in that when it comes to health advice?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty much the same as Googling your symptoms, because AI is just taking the information that's already in the system and it's just regurgitating that for you depending on what you prompt. I think AI can help a lot when you're like doing shopping lists, when you're doing, when you're trying to get like recipes, you know, when you say, oh, I eat like this, can you create me a recipe for this? That's really helpful. It can help in researching good restaurants. It can help a lot with the research. And of course, everybody's using it nowadays because it is certainly helpful. But in terms of like your health, it's, even if you prompt the AI right and you try to get the right information from the AI, even then it makes mistakes and it doesn't give you the right information. And it's like, it's like Googling your symptoms. Well, yeah. It's really hard to use AI for your health. And it's like nowadays it's madness. You know, I do Instagram reels and then people just put the information in AI and put the prompt under the video in the comments. And then like, oh, but ChatGPT says this. But then if you prompt it differently, it says the complete opposite, because there are like good studies about keto, there are bad studies about keto. There are good studies about coffee, there are bad studies about coffee. You know, so whatever you prompt, you get the result that you want to have. So it's, and then what is right and what is wrong. So it's really, it's crazy. Yeah.
So when you think about mindset, how much does that play into this whole game? I would love to come back to some more specific on brain fog, autoimmune conditions and so on. But just because I think we're sort of running from, like, you know, the information out there is not necessarily any good anyway. But what mindset do you actually need to find a solution? I'm sure that's what you teach your clients as well, so that they actually figure out how to help themselves, right?
Yeah, so I definitely talk about this with my clients. It is an important part, but there has to be an important differentiation between mindset and between, like, you have this problem because of your mindset. Because you can't manifest chronic illness. You can't get this just because you're thinking bad or you experience negative things in your life, because people get blamed for their own problems. If you look at how the system is treating you when you have chronic illness, it's always like, oh, it's your genes. It's your body attacking you. It's your emotions. It's in your head, or you're making this up. It's always like putting the blame on you. And mindset, in a way, helps that, you know, I help people with mindset issues in a way that they are not able to implement the things that I'm giving them. They're not able, there's some mindset thing around anything they do in life. Sometimes even in childhood, they were not allowed to, they always had to eat everything from the plate. So, and if they didn't do that, that was like a bad thing, or they have like trauma because of that. So you work with that. And then, okay, it's fine if you can't eat the whole plate, or it's fine if you can't do everything. It's fine. There's lots of perfectionism as well in people. So you need to work on them. I'm a perfectionist, you know? So I had to learn as well how to chill out a little bit and realize, okay, you can relax. It's okay if not everything is perfect. Of course, you don't want to eat unhealthy or you don't want to put any bad things in your body, but you need to find a good place where you're at, that you're not going too crazy about all the bad things. Because if you learn that stuff, it can put you into like a downward spiral that you think, oh my God, this is bad. And I'm rather not touch this thing here and then touch my date and eat it because I can get a virus or a strep bacteria. It's like, for me, it's like very good to know as much as you can, that you can make an informed decision about the situation you're in. That's for me also kind of mindset. And then not going crazy about it. It's not easy, and you need to teach it and you need to, you know, teach it to people. And then also how to cope with downfalls, how to cope with situations when, you know, I had clients, they healed and then they got a symptom back and they're like, oh my God, you have PTSD around that. I have a lot of PTSD around getting brain fog again. Because I'm so afraid of this. I'm so afraid of getting it back again. And I understand everybody that healed a little bit and then you get a flare up and the symptoms are coming back. And then like, oh my God, nothing is working. And then you're like, it's all good. You're going to get better again. We're just going to look at your protocol. We're going to do the diet. We need to adjust maybe some things that you're getting back on track again. But it's all going to be all right. You need to relax. It's important. Do this meditation, or you remember you were healing this before, you were able to do this already before, you can do it again. There are like things on the mindset side that can help tremendously in your healing process. But what is very important to understand for people is that you're not sick because it's in your head. It's not, you're not sick because you're making this up. You're not sick because you're crazy or something. They're like real physical issues in your body that are causing what's going on. And everything else, whether it would be trauma, whether it would be relationship breakups, whether it would be pregnancies, anything that's going on, exposures, it's only a trigger. It's not the very thing that's causing what's going on with you. And a good mindset in the end is great. It certainly helps to cope with the situation when you're sick. But it's not, I would say it's not the most important thing, because if you don't know what to do, you can have the best mindset, but you're not getting out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard you saying on a different podcast that the mindset of it's not your fault, and it's even though you might have been told that you won't live as long, or that you actually there will be no cure, or you know, nothing you can really do about that. That's when mindset really helps to keep the hope up, to keep looking, because I always remember the joke of when people say, "I've tried everything." I would probably argue, gee, there are so many options. That's really unlikely that you have tried everything, and totally understand that that's how it feels. But the mindset in that instant of just keep going and finding a solution, I think is super important.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I also understand when people lose hope. I really understand that, because you especially, and people that never had a health issue in their life can't understand this. But if you really have something going on for years and you went to 20 doctors, and or even if you just started to do your doctor shopping, that's how you can call it, like going from one doctor to another doctor, you can lose hope very fast, and you can feel like you're crazy, and then you're like, oh my god, nothing is helping me anymore, I'm a lost case. But you're definitely not.
Just to give some more possibilities of how you actually do get into autoimmune conditions or chronic fatigue, what are a couple of other sort of triggers that you have seen? You know, you mentioned for yourself it was heavy metals and virus, but I'm sure there are others that you see quite frequently.
So, I mean, you can break it down to what's causing illness to pathogens and toxins. So pathogens like Epstein-Barr virus, but also shingles virus, different kinds of viruses, you can break, and also bacteria, like one of the bacteria that is really, really stubborn and causing a lot of problems is Streptococcus bacteria. It's antibiotic resistant, it's causing acne, it's causing UTIs, it's causing interstitial cystitis, it's causing what else? It's causing SIBO, it's all candida problems that we talk about nowadays are not because of candida, it's because of strep bacteria. So pathogens. And also E. coli, for instance. And then a lot of toxins, toxic heavy metals, pharmaceuticals, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, all of that, fluoride. And then also even DDT. Even DDT is still in our systems. They used to spray that everywhere. And then people started to get neurological symptoms from it. But it's not like the DDT is not like getting into your body and your body is able to cleanse it. It stays in your liver if you don't cleanse it. And you inherit that. So everybody from us is running around having DDT in their bodies. So the pesticides and the radiation also plays a role, but especially in terms of autoimmune conditions, let's say chronic fatigue. If you talk about like even like the really bad ME/CFS, it's considered an autoimmune condition where they say it's, ooh, basically, they don't know what's causing it, but they just say to you, oh, it's your body attacking you. Okay, it's your own body attacking your nervous system. Hashimoto's, it's your own body attacking your thyroid. Colitis is your own body attacking your gut. And, or let's say eczema, psoriasis is your own immune system attacking your skin, for example. And if you hear that for the first time, it doesn't make sense. It's like, why on earth would my body attack me? Now, why would my body do that? And the reason why it doesn't make sense is because it's not true. most people, they immediately have that intuitive reaction. I'm like, why? Like, it doesn't make sense. And they started coming up with that in the 1950s, 1960s for the first time because especially women were starting to get weird symptoms. I think Hashimoto's was, I need to look that up, don't quote me on it. I think it was discovered in 1912. Mm. And since then, we don't know what's the cause of Hashimoto's. Wow. It's like over 100 years. So it's just inflammation in the thyroid. And then they came up with, we see antibodies in your body. So that somehow means that your body is attacking you. So, okay, my body's attacking me. That's why I have the inflammation. But the funny thing is they could never show a white blood cell, which is your immune system. They could never show a white blood cell attacking your thyroid, attacking your nervous system, let's say MS, multiple sclerosis, where you have lesions in the brain, not always, but where you have like severe neurological problems. They could never show a white blood cell doing this. They could never show a white blood cell attacking your thyroid, attacking your nervous system, attacking your skin, attacking your gut, causing colitis or Crohn's. They could never show that because it doesn't exist. Like it's not there. They can look at as much as they want for it. It doesn't exist because your body would never attack you. It's just an excuse they came up with that. And that's also why they could never prove it. And the reason why people have antibodies in their blood tests when they get an autoimmune diagnosis is because there is a foreign invader, which is a virus most of the time. That's why antibodies are there in the first place. Antibodies are created from your body to cover or to realize, okay, there is a foreign invader. We need to get rid of it. We need to say to our immune system, go there, target this, get it out of the body. That's why our bodies create antibodies. That's why people with autoimmune condition have an antibody, because that's there because an Epstein-Barr virus is there to attack your thyroid. There's a shingles virus that's causing your colitis. The EBV is also causing psoriasis and eczema. So, or even the chronic fatigue that I help people with a lot. And this is what's really going on with autoimmune conditions. The viral part is actually the biggest part. And the heavy metals, they provide fuel for viruses. So viruses, they're alive and they eat, you know, they eat certain foods, but they also eat toxins like mercury, aluminum, copper, these kind of things especially. And when you have more of that, you get a more aggressive virus because it can feast more. And the more eggs you eat, the more you feed the virus, because eggs feed viruses, or gluten or dairy. That's why gluten is inflammatory. People always say, gluten gives me inflammation. But it's not the gluten itself that's giving you inflammation, because my grandma or my grandpa ate gluten his whole life. He never had inflammation in his body. But there are no teenagers or younger people like me that eat gluten and they get brain fog or they get inflammation because it's feeding the virus that is causing the problem in the first place. So that's about autoimmune conditions. It's all about getting rid of the toxins, getting rid of the viruses that are causing it,
That's so refreshing to hear that, you know, we actually have moved on from saying, we don't really know, therefore the best guess we have is the body is just confused and attacks itself. That's so good to hear, because I found that always really hard to believe. And that's probably a problem just in general with our Newtonian thinking of, we basically find an answer within the knowledge we have with a really linear thinking. But it's just a theory. And I think we should give credit to that there might be actually something we don't know. Because at the moment where you do that, then you can also be open to like, well, let's keep looking, because this answer really doesn't satisfy really the picture that we see, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you look at science, 100 years back, or there were doctors, or like a couple of decades back, there were doctors recommending cigarettes. And then 100 years ago, they were putting mercury in the late 1800s, there was mercury in teething powder. And when you went to your doctor with your child, they gave your child mercury to cleanse your gut. You know, that was the science back then. And if you think about, what is the science doing right now? And if we go another 100 years from now and we look back to this time, we will look at this the same as we look right now to the mercury stuff that they did and the DDT that they sprayed everywhere and recommending cigarettes. So, it's going to be exactly the same. When we look back 100 years from now at autoimmune conditions, we were like, oh my God, can you imagine? They were telling people their body is attacking themselves. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, I remember this passage of George Washington's biography, where he comes back from his last ride out into really harsh winter conditions, and he's not feeling particularly well. And I think they let some blood, so basically took some blood from him away, and that didn't help enough. And I think then let again, and then again, and then he died that night, I believe. And sure, you know, I'm sure that there's something positive of giving blood to a certain degree. I actually don't know. I haven't looked into that depth. But it hurt me to think like, oh man, you know, we're just such an experiment to ourselves of what we do to ourselves to get better. And that was, I believe, not particularly great for him. But he died. So it wasn't.
That's another topic we can go into.
Yeah. I saw you actually having a reel on this whole, that's more in terms of the industry that sits behind it, right?
Yeah.
Look, if you don't mind, I would now go and step further. And you mentioned sort of your own journey, but you know, if you see people that have autoimmune conditions that have brain fog and chronic fatigue, do you put them normally on a sort of vegetarian diet, leaning onto the medical medium, or does it really depend on the person, or how do you tackle these types of issues? Because it seems that you definitely have found solutions there, but there won't probably be antibiotics and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's fully based on the medical medium information, and I help people. You know, there are a thousand ways to customize that. There are some things that are very foundational, the liver cleansing, the taking care of the adrenals. That's what they learn, especially. There are people that are coming to me that are doing this already because they know I'm an expert at this and I can help them, guide them with their protocol even more, because, you know, you can take like 200 different supplements, but what are the ones that are the most important for you? There are like so many foods you can eat. There are so many cleanses you can do. What are the ones you need to do in your specific situations? And it's not like, oh, you have to be plant-based. Of course, the majority of the foods are plants, because plants are antiviral. If you think about fruit has a lot of vitamin C. Vitamin C is antiviral, and chronic illness is caused by viruses most of the time, or bacteria. And fruit is killing off the viruses and bacteria because it has vitamin C and other polyphenols and other compounds that are also antiviral. But you just can't get that from animal products. I'm not like here and saying to every client, hey, you need to go plant-based 100%. I have clients that eat animal products. I have clients that don't. It is really depending on the situation. I have clients, when they have specific symptoms, I say, go plant-based. It's the most important thing for you, because it makes it easier for you to see improvements with what you have going on. And some people, they get better even though they eat animal products. So it's not like either or. And I help them with these specific protocols, and it works miraculously. Like I have, I'm always challenging people, and I'm always saying, because you always see people on Instagram and reels and so on and so forth, but nobody's working with people. Nobody is like, they're just trying to sell you a supplement. They're trying to sell you, most of the time, they're trying to sell you their products. There's always, nobody's working with people.
Yeah.
No, you know, they're just doing a health podcast on, nothing against podcasts or anything. I have my own podcast, and it's important to have podcasts, but they're just sitting behind the desk the whole time thinking about what kind of next podcast they do, but they never actually work with people every day and get them better and have results. Like I work with, I'm in contact with people that have chronic illness every day. Every day, whether it's on my Instagram, whether it's my clients most of the time, of course. And the results is what counts. And I don't see people out there working with people and having real results with them. I just don't see that most of the time. And you can really filter out the majority of the people on the internet talking left and right about, oh, this food is good, this food is bad. Okay, if you say this food is good, this food is bad, but like, have you ever Or when you say, oh, this is good for SIBO, this is bad. Have you ever helped somebody with SIBO? Have you ever helped somebody getting rid of autoimmune conditions? And then I never see that. So this is actually where this is actually where it comes down to what really works and what not. And when it comes to chronic health issues, the results are amazing. Yeah,
I relate to that. And I think there's also a component of where do you actually live? Like I live in the subtropics and mold is a real issue. It's unreal with like when the raining season comes here. Anything that is not air conditioned will probably create mold. It's just in the air. And so when I talk to practitioners, the people that are clued up, they would say like, well, drink Powdiarco tea, for example, or other teas that are sort of antifungal. Yeah, have antifungal properties, which makes a lot of sense because they're used in areas or come from areas of the world where that's would be a real issue if they wouldn't eat what they or drink what they drink, right? And the whole notion of Hippocrates saying, you know, be the food, the medicine, the food, to me makes so much sense. And what you just mentioned there in terms of all the different, especially plant-based, you know, supplements, if you like, or, you know, like active ingredients in food, that makes a lot of sense. At the end of the day, often supplements and medicine comes mostly from different plants that have that particular property or have these particular substances in it. So it makes sense to, you know, eat as much as you can of that because it will help you. But my point is, it depends on your circumstances, right? Like, you know, if you're in this type of the world, then you would eat that. And seasonal, you would eat that. Or your circumstances require a little bit more of this. It's a really customized approach at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. It depends on where you are. The food availability is also something that is important. Yeah. It's one of the main reasons why I moved to the US, actually. People were telling me, oh my God, how can you move to the US? The food is so toxic. Yeah. The food is toxic everywhere in the world. Like everybody is spraying pesticides on their foods. Even the organic stuff is sprayed with copper sprays and so on and so forth. Like, it doesn't matter if you're in Germany or if you're in the US. Maybe there are like two pesticides that are banned in Germany or New Zealand that are allowed in the US. But what I love about the US is the food availability. You know, just to give you one example, asparagus is such an amazing food for the liver. Asparagus is so good for people with adrenal fatigue and with neurological problems. It's antiviral. It's, again, so good for your liver. I have that 2 or 3 months in Germany per year. In the US, I can eat that every day. You know, that's one of the reasons why I talk a lot about wild blueberries here and there. Try to find wild blueberries when you're living in Italy, you know, in the US, and you need to get the right wild blueberries. There's only one variety that actually grows in Canada or North America, which is it's called Vaccinium angustifolium. This is like the true wild blueberry. And you get that in Germany in some stores, but in Italy and then in Spain or in China or Australia, you get it actually. But in the US, you have everything. There is never a shortage of any food. I get everything from the stores. And yes, is it sprayed? Probably, even the organic stuff, probably. But that's the same in Germany as well. That's the same in New Zealand as well. And that's why, you know, I work with people in the US. I work with people in Finland. I work with people in Germany, in Switzerland, Austria, even China. I had a client. So, and everything works as long as you have the right kind of foods, even though it's conventional. If you have and that just shows how strong nature is. Even if it's sprayed, the benefits of an asparagus, of an orange, or of a lemon or celery is still stronger than the pesticides or the bad things that are on there.
Wow.
And you can still get better even if you don't have the best resources. And I mean, nowadays, just in the case of wild blueberries, you can buy wild blueberry powder nowadays almost everywhere. So there are workarounds and it's getting better and better, but you know, I don't even know what the beginning of the question was or why I even started this. But well, yeah, you talked about where you live. Of course, like it's a thing. If you have more sun, like it's one of the main reasons why I moved to West Palm Beach in Florida. It's 24/7 the whole year. You have sun, of course. It's hurricane season. It rains a little bit here and there. It's warm. It's so soothing. I love even hot weather. I don't have a problem with that. Some people don't like it. In the winters, it's perfect climate here. You have the sun all the time. You have the beach. You have the water. It's like, it's such a different, lifestyle. And it's so good for your health as well. Yeah.
Agreed. And yeah, I'm a sucker for the US. I love going there, and I'm there 3 to 4 times a year. And
no,
contain myself, even if I'm there just for 1 week when I go to Whole Foods, one of those, you know, outlets a day. It's like, oh, how much can I eat within a week? It's just the accessibility of things is absolutely amazing. And I think that's a scale as well, and many other reasons. But I'm totally with you. It's great to have things like that available. Ever thought about writing a book? Or have you written a book?
No, I didn't write a book for now. So the thing is, it doesn't really make sense. I don't know. Maybe I could write a book at some point, but it doesn't really make sense for me to write a book, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. It's just like you have so much wisdom.
Yeah. So, I mean, the wisdom is coming from the medical medium books. So I could just use this information and put it in the book and then just say, what's my own information and not credit it. Like, then it would be... that doesn't make any sense. So it doesn't really make sense. Maybe about a different topic at some point. I'm doing other things. Maybe about a different topic. You never know what's happening in life. But I also started a natural cosmetic brand with my brother in Germany. So
oh, cool. What's the name?
It's Bergmann's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because it's me and my brother. We only ship to Germany, Austria, and Switzerland now. That's also where my heart is as well. My brother's taking care of it most of the time, and he's 2 years older than me. He's my best friend since ever. We have the strongest bond, and we're just very close. And I could never imagine somebody else had to run a business with. And he's like same as me, very ambitious. He used to be a soccer player as well. And so we were like, because we avoid fragrances in all products, we were looking for a hair wax that we can use. And then you try the natural ones and you see like, oh my God, they don't work. My hair is not strong enough anymore. It doesn't fit. If I go through it, everything is sticky and you have white residue there. And then I was like, let's just do our own. And that's basically how it started. And my brother then just put all the work in. We got a cosmetic engineer that helped create the recipe, and it's fragrance free. It's natural cosmetics. That was the first product we launched. And a couple of weeks ago, we launched a hair serum that is like helping to reduce itchy scalp and promote hair growth. And it's like with natural ingredients like thyme, rosemary, turmeric, and aloe vera in there. So this is what I started with him as well. He's taking care of most of it, but you never know. You never know what you can write about in the future. So, it really depends, but that's also something that I'm really proud of, and I hope we can do it worldwide, and we can do it in the US as well at some point. But I'm very sure that we will do that at some point.
Yeah, with your track record and ambition, I don't think it's more a question of when than if.
No, 100%.
I know that you're also known for talking about postpartum health. After giving birth, which is something I've got a few kids, so I've gone through that with my wife in one way or another, or at least witnessed it. What issues do you see that, you know, new mothers have that maybe, or not new mothers, but, you know, having just given birth, what are the issues that you see sort of, and what are the solutions that you found about this topic?
So what's happening is when you give birth, it's a really strong output from your adrenals, because you need a lot of adrenaline to push out the baby. It's like huge amounts of adrenaline that's flooding your body because you give birth. Obviously, your body needs to be able to do that. And on the one hand, what's happening in the body is that adrenaline is a hormone that feeds viruses as well. So viruses and bacteria, they can feed on adrenaline.
Wow.
Okay. And so a lot of women end up with a thyroid diagnosis after their pregnancies, and then they take thyroid medication because their doctors are telling them, but they don't know why they even have the thyroid problems in the first place. But the adrenaline from the childbirth was feeding the virus that was dormant in your liver and in your body, but now it got activated. So Epstein-Barr virus is like, for most, it's dormant. And it can wake up after 2 years, after 20 years, after 30 years. Most people have it for the first time when they get mononucleosis, the infamous kissing disease. And in a teenager, most of the time, and then it stays, it goes back into your body, or it stays in your body. It goes dormant, it goes into major organs like your liver and your spleen, reproductive system as well, causing like so many problems for women, like PCOS, endometriosis, fibroids, infertility, mystery infertility, and also things like irregular periods as well. And what's happening after childbirth, these viruses get fed, they get stronger, and then they can attack you more easily. And also the adrenaline output that you get is also lowering your immune system. So women have it very hard when they don't really take care of their bodies properly. The adrenaline can cause a lot of problems. It can actually, it feeds the viruses. It is lowering your immune system, so you're even more prone to getting chronic illness. And it's also very hard on your adrenals as well. So a lot of women get adrenal fatigue after childbirth. And the reason they started to get energy crashes, they have dry mouth, dry eyes, they crave stimulants. The sleep is not as good anymore. All symptoms of weakened adrenals. And because of the huge adrenaline output. And most people, and especially also women, they're on caffeine the whole day, maxing out their adrenals already. And then it's like the strip that broke the camel's back, you know, the childbirth. Mm. That's the very thing that tips the scale at the end. And then you start to get chronic illness. Your hair is falling out because your adrenals are weak. You get your first thyroid diagnosis. You get chronic fatigue, brain fog. All kinds of chronic illness can start. It can be triggered by pregnancy, but it's not the pregnancy that was causing it. It was underlying issues that were already in your body, but they were already like on a scale to tip. And then the pregnancy was like tipping the scale. And that's happened for so many women. It's like when I talk to people for the first time, sometimes they tell me, I have 3 kids and I have these and these symptoms. And I was like, this started after pregnancy, right? And they were like, yeah, how do you know? It's like, it's always like this. You know, it's so often that pregnancy triggers any kind of chronic illness. And that's often what happens.
So what role plays stimulants or the avoidance of stimulants to get better?
Oh, it's huge. Like getting rid of caffeine is one of the most important things for your body, for your brain, for your adrenals. We could do a whole podcast on caffeine. Like it's crazy. For the brain itself, it's even worse than alcohol. Like a lot of people are always saying, oh, alcohol is so bad for you. But what about caffeine? Caffeine is neurotoxic itself to the brain. It's a psychoactive drug. The whole world would not function if we would not have caffeine tomorrow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like doctors would not be able to do surgery without caffeine. Uber drivers, taxi drivers would not be able to do their job. Nobody would function. Everybody is reliant on that drug. And the reason for that is because if you consume caffeine, it prompts your adrenals to release lots of adrenaline. And that adrenaline from your adrenals is giving you that fake high. And you get that high and then it goes down again. And you need caffeine again. And it goes up and down the whole time, weakening your adrenals. Caffeine is very acidic as well. Like everybody is talking about, alkalinity, you need to be alkaline because disease forms in a body that is very acidic. Caffeine is very acidic. And then I see people doing coffee enemas, shooting coffee up their ass and thinking it would do anything. It's like, it's even worse than just consuming caffeine because it's not cleansing or anything. If you at least have caffeine orally, it gets buffered by your stomach glands and your hydrochloric acid at least. And then it gets released into your body. But if you do a coffee enema, it just goes right straight into your, it's like emergency situation for your body.
Oh, man.
People are doing these crazy things because they're desperate for help and they try everything. They drink their own urine, they do coffee enemas, all of the things that are not doing anything for your body, but they're just hopeless. But with the caffeine, it's really bad for your brain because the adrenaline itself, adrenaline is a substance that not a lot of people, it's not often talked enough about adrenaline. Adrenaline is like, it's very acidic. it's like battery acid in a way. And adrenaline kills your neurons. It kills brain neurotransmitter chemicals. So you get even more brain fog from that. Your liver has, because your adrenaline is getting released, something in your body has to soak up that adrenaline and neutralize it. That's what your liver is doing. So you overburden your liver with that as well. And the caffeine itself is, because it's so acidic, you get it into your body, it gets buffered a little bit, but something has to buffer that acidity when you consume caffeine and coffee. It's about all caffeine. It's about matcha tea, black tea, green tea, white tea, chocolate, coffee, anything that has caffeine has to be buffered by your body, and your body is using calcium for that. Most people don't have enough bioavailable calcium from oranges, lemons, leafy greens, broccoli in their system. So what is your body doing? It uses up calcium from your bones and from your teeth to buffer that acidity, setting the stage for osteoporosis, setting the stage for losing your teeth, for mineral deficiencies. That's what caffeine is doing. So what does that mean for somebody that has chronic illness or is struggling with any kind of condition? You're weakening your immune system, you're weakening your liver, you're weakening your adrenals, you make it harder for your brain to think straight. It's making everything worse. And I get it that people can function without caffeine. And the goal is often, I help people getting rid of caffeine. The goal is not to just do it cold turkey, because then you get a migraine and it's like horrible to get rid of caffeine again. Yeah. You need to do it very slowly, step by step. You need to rebuild your brain. You need to do lots of coconut water. You need to do lots of spinach, lots of things that are with a lot of mineral salts that replenish neurons and neurotransmitter chemicals that your brain is able to function on its own again without caffeine. And that's why it's so important to avoid stimulants. And if you think about drugs, all drugs have the same mechanism in the body in a way that you can even say that to any addiction. Yeah. Every addiction that a human being has is because of their own adrenaline. Because whether you smoke, whether you drink coffee, whether you're addicted to video games, whether you have addiction to sex, to pornography, any kind of that stuff, it's always, anytime you're doing that substance or action of that addiction, it prompts adrenaline. And adrenaline is giving you that high. Whether you're doing gambling, or whether you're playing video games, or whether you're drinking coffee. And that adrenaline is what's giving you that high. And it's all connected all the time to addictions.
Yeah, that makes sense. It sort of tries to balance and chases, I guess, adrenaline to then get through the day, or, you know, to give you the feeling that you're after to be more even keel.
Yeah, you chase that adrenaline. Exactly.
Is there a difference between decaf? So is it for coffee in particular? I was just listening out to, like, are we talking just about the caffeine in the coffee, or is there more to it? And you say, look, even if you do decaf, it will still not be amazing because of the acid, because of other reason.
So decaf doesn't mean there's no caffeine in there. It just means there's less caffeine in there. Yeah. And for decaf, they also use chemicals to extract the caffeine from the decaf, so there can still be a residue from the chemicals in the decaffeinated coffee. If it helps you to lower your caffeine intake, and if your goal is to finally get rid of it, try to do it.
Yeah.
I would like to do it differently, but if it helps you to get rid of it, if your goal is to get rid of it and you use decaffeinated coffee to do that, it's fine. But if you drink decaffeinated coffee because you think it's better or not as bad, or it's even better, good for you, that's not the case. It's still bad for you.
Yeah. And you do the reishi latte or something like that. A good friend of mine really high end mushroom and gin tonics company, and when people talk about, oh, it needs to be bitter or something, there's so much in nature, including mushroom, that you can use instead to get this bitterness, if that's the excuse.
I like chaga, reishi, that's amazing, lion's mane.
But then
what I don't like is they sometimes fool people with these mushroom blends, because often there's cacao in there, which is also caffeine. And then you try to do something good for you. Like, I'm doing my blended mushroom coffee here. And then I'm telling them, that's the same thing as drinking coffee, because there's cacao in there, you still have caffeine. And then they're like, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah. No, and yeah, when it comes to then the actual science of like what do these different mushrooms do? There's a huge difference in terms of how it is extracted, and there's not much research out there of how to measure this properly. I have this conversation on a regular basis with Mason from Superface, who's really passionate about growing it the way that DDAO would grow it. So Chinese tradition managed it in the right season, in the right altitude and part of the world and so on. And he would say like, well, you know, you can have an extract that is 1:1, which basically is not a strong one, or 1:20, you know, and so on. So there are details in it, but the label is the same. It's like, yeah, this is, you know, this is ratio, this is chaga and so on, but is it the fruiting body? Is it the extract and so on? So yeah, same thing. Hey, you really need to know what you're doing there.
Always.
What are you eating?
I eat dates. I eat medjool nice. Dates. Yeah. The thing is, my favorite dates are Sukari dates. I don't know if you ever tried them.
Not sure.
A specific variety of dates. They're called Sukari. It's coming from sukra, from sugar.
Right.
And they're so incredibly sweet, and they taste like caramel. And I love them so much. And I think I can get them in the US, but it just takes like months to deliver them. And yeah, in Germany, I just could get them because they're closer to Saudi Arabia, because that's where the organic dates are coming from. But now here I'm eating the medjool ones. They're still okay, but it's just not the same. So that's the only thing I'm a little bit sad about the food here. It's the only thing.
Yep. No, I get it. It's so funny. Hey, I normally ask guests a couple of questions that I'm always intrigued about. And when it comes to hanging out with anyone for anyone, whether the person is dead or alive, who would it be that you would hang out with to have a conversation, or a green juice via green juice or something else that is not coffee, I guess?
I mean, that's easy. It would be Anthony William. It would be medical medium.
Okay,
that's easy.
It's quite weird, but I have a friend staying who is actually a friend of Anthony, so I will ask him how connected he still is. I know for some years he did some work with him. So who knows? I will ask him afterwards. He's from the States. He's from Pennsylvania.
Oh, amazing!
He's staying with us. So yeah, who knows? I will ask him after this. And what book? And I think you answered this already, but what book was the most impactful of the ones that you have read on your health journey?
Yeah, it was a liver rescue book. It was a liver rescue book. Anyway, yeah.
I remember reading that sort of around the 2017 as well. Yeah, an amazing book. Recommended for anyone. Yeah, who wants to look into this? It's crazy what normal vegetables and the right preparation can do.
Yeah, exactly.
What's your health routine in the morning? That's another question I often ask, because I'm always inspired sort of how people go about their morning.
So I wake up and I immediately drink lemon water, like 1 liter, 32 ounces.
Warm or cold?
No, cold, room temperature. Yeah. Then 15, 30 minutes later, I have a celery juice, also 1 liter. And then later, 15, 30 minutes later, I have the heavy metal detox smoothie, which is a smoothie that is cleansing metals from the body. That's my morning routine. In between, I'm also already working, doing whatever I need to do. But, you know, cleaning up the kitchen or just making sure I don't leave such a big mess, because I'm... Yeah, I can easily create a mess. It's something where I'm not really good at. I'm very disciplined in a lot of things, but when it comes to this, but I have people that are helping me as well. So that's something that's, I'm very fortunate and blessed about it. But anyways, that is what I'm doing in the morning. It's a good morning cleanse, and it's amazing. It's very effective to cleanse your body.
How does your digestion go with that? That's something that I sometimes wonder how people sort of manage that amount of juice. Is there any trick, like, do you chew your juice and, you know, basically, what is it? Chew your juices and drink your solids, or is there anything else that you do to really support your digestion system?
So I didn't start with that, obviously. If you would start with that just randomly, can be that you're getting a good diarrhea. It can be that you don't get anything. But lemon water for most people is fine. It even tastes good. It's amazing. You get hydrated a lot. But then the celery juice can be the first issue. The first time I had celery juice, I got immediately diarrhea. And then people are like, oh my God, I drink celery juice. It's so bad for me. You get diarrhea. It's like, no, it's good for you. It's cleansing the bad stuff out of your gut that you're supposed to get rid of. And it's actually a good sign when you get a little bit of diarrhea because you just cleanse the stuff that's in your gut. And the more bacteria and toxins you have, the more bacteria you can get. So if you have that, just do less, you know. You can still do a glass. You can still do even, you know, some people are so sensitive, they have to start with a teaspoon of celery juice.
Wow.
And celery juice is so antiviral and so cleansing that it can just cause some diarrhea. And that's, again, it's not a problem. The longer you're doing it, the better it gets. And it's not a problem long term. It was for me the same. After a while, I could tolerate more. I could, again, have like 32 ounces now, 1 liter. And, you know, even me, every once in a while, I still can get a run in the morning because there's a new pocket that was like open up and it's just getting released again. But digestion is totally fine. Like there's, it's actually one of the best things you can do for your digestion.
Yeah. How very cool. What are you reading at the moment? Always interest of mine, sort of what type of book you're into at the moment.
Let me think. I was reading, I mean, I'm always reading the Magic Medium books here and there, but I was reading lately, do you know the book, The One Thing?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was reading.
Hmm? The One Thing That Moves the Needle?
Yeah, exactly. It's by, I don't know who it was. I don't know the author, but The One Thing is an incredible book. Yeah. I was reading that. And then I was reading another book that was called, I don't know if it's okay for you to get into that topic because it's very sensitive. So I don't know.
Probably has to do with sort of like immunization, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is an interesting topic. Deep. Maybe I should have you on again, and then we go into sort of like more deep topics like that. But yeah, it's fascinating. It's a rabbit hole to go down.
I don't know if I want to talk about this publicly, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. Exactly. No, I get it.
It's, you know, people talk about this and then they go missing, you know. It's...
it's an interesting thing of how to debate things versus misinformation versus like harmful information. And I guess, you know, we're really early... It's really early stage, again, I guess, as our society to be exposed to... and have access to a lot of information that previously was considered not allowed and so on. So I think it's also just bigger picture is probably it's just an evolution of people being actually better informed and how to have a debate without being canceled every time you say something that is not exactly ideal for some people in society.
But the book is called The Moth and the Iron Lamp.
That's The Moth and the Iron Lamp? That is a really unusual title. I'll look it up. Hey, thanks for that. I actually, before I let you go, so can we find online sort of more information about what you do, but also like, you know, maybe your morning smoothie and in particular how to work with you? I recommend to everyone to find a mentor like Theo, because in my mind, that's the way to really take it to the next level. Just reading a book or watching stuff online, I find, never completely did it for me. I even in the early days, I would have had mentors that would sort of guide me to the next level or to overcome come issues. So highly recommended to check out Theo's work. Theo, what would be the best place to start?
Definitely my Instagram. I have so much free content there about what kind of foods are good for what specific situation. I have a lot of YouTube videos, so definitely check out the YouTube videos and the Instagram. Yeah, if you're really interested in directly working with me, I would definitely go directly to the website and then check that out. Book a free call there, talk to my team, see even how I can help you as well. And I work with professionals and business owners. You were saying professional athletes. That was like in the very beginning. I'm not doing that anymore. If you're a professional athlete, then yeah, of course I do that, but it's more like the professionals and business owners. But yeah, that's where I help people with. So definitely check out the website, check out the YouTube, check out the testimonials as well. That's always really powerful. The Trustpilot is also powerful. So I will check all of these things out, and this is what you can link, what people definitely should look out for. Yeah, thanks.
Love it. Yeah. No, of course. And hey, thank you so much for putting that information out there and really focusing on that, helping so many people through your direct work and also through the information that you create. So I'm really appreciative, and I have the feeling you're not done by a long shot, which makes sense since you're an ambitious and focused person. So really inspiring as well talking to you. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. It was quite a long form sort of podcast, but I think we got covered a lot of grounds. It was really awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I really I'm grateful for the invitation. You know, as soon as I saw that, I think Mattea was reaching out, I saw that she was like, hey, you know, we want to do podcast with you. It's like the founder of Clearlight Infrared. I was like, Clearlight, I heard of that before. Like, one of my best friends has a Clearlight Infrared sauna at home. And like, I was already feeling that this would be great. So I had a good feeling about this. So thanks for the invitation. I really appreciate it as well. I enjoyed the conversation. Really, really neutral. So I appreciate
it. We're the founders of Clearlight Sales International, which is a distributing company that distributes from the founders of Clearlight, who are Rowley Duncan and Andy Capps. Amazing people. Rowley has done amazing work over the last 25 years of really looking into how can you support the body the best. And he figured out that he can reach more people by creating a product than being a chiropractor. And that's how he created Clearlight Saunas, with sort of electrosmog shielding, ELF, EMF, but also just using non-toxic woods and plastics. So kudos to him. He's an amazing man.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Exactly. Thank you so
much. Awesome, Theo. You go well. Would love to have you on again in some shape or form in the future, but thank you so much for making time.
You're very welcome. Definitely.